condition.
And I don't, I'm not going to sit here and try and make a connection between the one and the other, but I at least have to ask that question about treating misdemeanors as violations, and what does that do, and what messages does that send? All those questions are ones that are coming up in my mind, and I don't have the information I need to
process that question. Maybe Mr. Linden can answer the question of whether crime rates are high in Multnomah County because the DA treats misdemeanors as violations. Could you come up?
I mean, Madam Chair, to state the question is almost to answer it, but just in terms of the policy, it is, I mean, I recognize it seems to me is it's an admission of system failure, and we're doing that lots of places in the system. In some ways, sentencing guidelines is that. It's at least an admission of system capacity, and I mean, those are the questions that are quite honestly running around my mind. Mr. Linden?
Yeah.
Madam Chair, Representative Clark, I know that in Multnomah County, the district attorney there has made a conscious decision that certain types of misdemeanor cases will be handled as violations, and I think it's done in recognition of at least two realities. One is because of the local correctional facility problems in that county, he has a good idea what types of misdemeanors, if convicted, are going to do any significant, appreciable, or for that matter, any time in the county facility. And secondly, I do think that the district attorney there has an appreciation for the total system costs involved in processing a misdemeanor case through for his office, for the defense bar, and for the courts, if in fact the sanction at the end is going to be relatively meaningless. I know that in a meeting on this matter last week that John Bradley, the chief deputy attorney in Multnomah County, attended. He indicated that their misdemeanor to violation treatment is successful in the sense of what they wanted it to do, which was to treat more realistically those offenders who weren't going to do anything significant in terms of jail time, and it does save us money up there. It winnows cases out of the system that otherwise we'd be spending trial counsel time on. In Marion County, I think District Attorney Penn has a similar philosophy about it, which is to let's be realistic about what types of misdemeanors are actually going to do any appreciable amount of jail time, and he actively reduces cases violations as well. But I think those two counties are the exception.
Can you make some estimate, we didn't ask you this when you were up before, what the cost savings would be statewide of implementing Section 23 sub C, the way it's currently drafted in the Dash A2 amendments?
Madam Chair, I believe that we would be looking at something in the nature of $1 to $3 million statewide. And the reason I have to hedge that is that the way this is written, the DA could do one of two things. The DA could either charge as a misdemeanor and dispose of as a violation, which is going to reduce the amount of time counsel puts in. Or a DA could charge as a violation, which eliminates the right to counsel. If the great majority of district attorneys were to charge these as violations, we eliminate the right to counsel, and I think we'd be close to the $3 million figure.
Is that a biennial, or is that
annual? Be a biennial figure. Biennial. And the other thing that makes it hard to predict is that there are exceptions to treatment under this section. For example, if you adopt the June 12th amendments that we proposed, DUIIs and attempting to elude cases, which are a significant number of the misdemeanors, would not be eligible for this coverage. And then there would be cases where there'd be compelling reasons, like, I'll use one of Doug Harkleroad's example. If you've got someone who's in on a charge and they find that they've perjured themselves on their financial statement, I can't speak for how a judge would treat that. I would see that as a case where you could make a compelling reason why that person shouldn't be treated as a violator. So there are a lot of intangibles, but we have a method where we could track what's happening in each county, and next time when this issue is reviewed, if in fact this is passed, we could say, we know in this county we took this many cases out of the system and saved this much money, and we could do that on a county by county as well as statewide basis.
I make one further comment?
Yes, go ahead, Mr. Shepherd.
On the, on page 12, lines 21 through 24, talking about the fiscal impact statement, Representative Mannix, the change, or the amendment that you proposed, I spoke with Mr. Linden about it. I'm not sure I understand this issue, but he said that your amendment would leave the law essentially where it is right now.
Well, I don't understand that we have that we require that there be an indigent defense fund fiscal impact statement every time the committee considers a bill. Do we have such a law right now, Mr. Linden?
Madam Chair, Representative Mannix, what we have is a law that requires a fiscal impact statement to be provided on every measure that is sent to the floor.
But it doesn't. But we would be saying here for each any committee considering it would have to have that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mannix, that's correct, and I do think that in most instances, there have been fiscal impacts presented prior to bills moving out of this committee, at least, that have indigent defense implications.
Ms. Callahan.
I had a question for Mr. Shepherd. The problem you were talking about, and there being some kind of extraordinary circumstance, if you were going to limit the post-conviction relief to 120 days, what kind of language would you suggest? Extraordinary circumstances, fraud, misrepresentation?
The language that I just jotted down was upon the showing of a manifest injustice. So that would severely limit it to the petitions outside of the 120 days.
Are there already some court cases interpreting what manifest injustice is?
Are you talking about the exception?
Yes.
It would be on the lines of if there was no reasonable way that the person could have brought up those grounds for relief within the 120-day period. Like later on, the statute is declared unconstitutional. They couldn't have brought that up. They could open up the case then. So that would be the grounds. It wouldn't be manifest injustice. It would be, and it's in the, if we get a copy of 2796, it's in there.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Mannix.
I'd like to run a proactive change by you and see how this works. All right, so we have a problem. A lot of DAs not paying attention to the option to treat something as a violation. What if we change the language at page 11 to do this, to say that upon appearance of the defendant upon any misdemeanor charge, and then we would exempt a couple of items per the recommendation of Mr. Linden, other than a misdemeanor created under ORS 813010 and ORS 811540, before the court asks under ORS 135020 how the defendant pleads to the charge, the district attorney shall declare on the record the intention whether or not to treat the offense in the case as a violation. The case shall proceed as a violation unless the district attorney affirmatively states that the case shall proceed as a misdemeanor. If the case proceeds as a violation, the accusatory instrument shall be amended to denominate as a violation of the offense in the case, etc. Then we change on line 27. If the district attorney declares an intention to treat the offense as a misdemeanor, the offense in such case shall thereafter continue to be treated as a crime. In other words, put in effect a presumption that unless the district attorney speaks up and says something at that time, it's going to be a violation. We'd still leave it discretionary. Wouldn't that help a lot without taking away that discretion?
I would think that upon review 2 years hence, we would still find that Marion and Multnomah County would be the only counties that were dealing with violations in a wholesale fashion. I suppose that's an educated guess.
Tells us a lot about popular support for this measure, too, doesn't it?
No, it tells us something really about the convenience of running an office. It's much easier for the district attorney to take a clear line. He's an elected political official. And what we're doing here is making the policy decision, and it takes into account both sides. We're looking at justice, we're looking at efficiencies in the system, and the policy decision really could be made here. We have 36 counties making these different decisions, and we have
called prosecutorial discretion.
Yeah, exactly. And this is a way to cause a little more uniformity in that line.
Other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who's here to testify today on Senate Bill 284? We'll close the... Representative Calhoun.
Are we work session on this?
No, we're not. Could be, as the committee is at the will of the committee, go into work session on Senate Bill 284. I'm looking at the utility company representatives who are here on Senate Bill 520. Looking
Madam
at
Chair.
The clock. Representative Mannix.
I move the A2 amendments to SB 284 to get us going.
Thank you.
Is that further amended by...
Well, I'm going to propose some changes.
Is that further amended as by the A2 amendments?
Well, let me accept the amendment. Let me accept the motion that's been made, Representative Calhoun, and then you can speak to it. The motion, thank you, Representative Mannix, is the dash A2 amendments to Senate Bill 284. Now, Representative Calhoun.
Is that further amended by the proposed amendments offered by the Judicial Department?
I'm going to propose those. You can do that right now if you'd like. I'm about to do that. I wanted to do it in series so we could just break it all up and move fast.
Why don't we try to separate this discussion and talk, if we would, for now about the A2 amendments, and then we'll get back to your motion, Representative Calhoun, which I ask if you are interested to make on the Judicial Department.
Madam Chair.
Representative Mannix.
I move that we amend the A2 amendments to reinsert the post-conviction relief with a 120-day limitation and the allowance for extraordinary circumstances, using the same kind of language which we used in House Bill 2796, A engrossed version. A wonderful piece of material developed by this Judiciary Committee.
2796.
A engrossed.
Is that the manifest injustice language?
I can show you the bill.
Yeah, it has... Unless the court on hearing a subsequent petition finds grounds for relief asserted which could not reasonably have been raised in the original or amended petition, that allows that override, and it says 120 days.
Thank you very much, Representative Mannix.
Is there any objection to that amendment, to the dash A2 amendments? It's adopted. Representative Mannix.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that we insert the proposed amendments offered by the Judicial Department, June 12, 1989, or make the proposed amendments, which will amend the dash A2 amendments.
To further amend the dash A2 amendments, Representative Mannix moves the proposed amendments to Senate Bill 284-A2, dated June 12, 1989, offered by the Judicial Department. Is there any objection? Hearing none. They're adopted. Representative Calhoun.
The old full committee has amended the CPAC recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Calhoun moves the bill. I'm sorry, actually, Representative Calhoun, we're on the dash A2 amendments as amended.
Bill with the dash A2 amendments as further amended.
What I'd like to do is take the vote on the dash A2 amendments as amended first, Representative Calhoun. Does everyone understand the motion? Is that acceptable to you?
Yes.
Then we'll vote on the amended bill. Representative Mannix.
Madam Chair, I intend to offer a few more amendments, and at least for purposes of us having a chance to vote on them.
We can do it either way, Representative Mannix.
All right, well, I'm willing to offer them right now.
Amendment to the motion.
I would move our, since we haven't, I was going to first remove them already, but I would move the dash A2 amendments as we've further amended.
Okay. The motion is the dash A2 amendments as they have been amended to this point. Is there any discussion on that motion? Representative Mannix has made it clear that he plans on offering subsequent motions to further amend. What Representative Calhoun is doing is moving the dash A2 amendment as it has been amended to now, and we're just dealing on a chronology.
I have a procedural question.
Representative Mannix.
How is it that we amended something we hadn't adopted?
I don't think we've actually...
Dev Calhoun is moving to adopt the dash A2 amendments as they have been amended. Representative Mannix has moved the dash A2s and amended them. Representative Minnis...
Well, I guess procedurally, I think you're going about it backwards, but that's your call. You're the chair. What you're trying to
Thank
do
you,
is adopt something
Minnis.
That we've amended before we adopt it. So now we're adopting in toto what we've done so far, I assume.
I think I had the same confusion as Representative Minnis is having right now, but we haven't, I think, technically we haven't adopted anything yet.
Let me suggest that the committee take a vote at this point on the dash A2 amendments as they have been amended by Representative Mannix's motions to this point. The amendments are the addition of the proposed Senate Bill 284, June 12th, Judicial Department amendments, and the language in section
22.
Sorry, what section is
section
it?
Section 22 of the bill.
Section 22 of the bill with regard to post-conviction relief. Is there any objection?
Object.
Representative Minnis, do you want to state your objection?
Don't like the bill.
Objection is noted.
Madam Chair.
The amendment is adopted. Representative Clark.
I mean, apparently some people on the committee have a whole lot stronger feelings about a lot of this than I do, and I don't want to keep us here forever, but I would be open to hearing a short statement, John, of your objection.
Well, I would be glad to. I think, as I stated earlier, when you get on page 12, subsection 3, talking about asking a district attorney to treat certain crimes as misdemeanors, I think it goes around the question of whether or not the indigent defense system is being managed appropriately and whether or not there are appropriate management tools in that system to allow proper management. We have heard nothing, absolutely nothing, this session that gives us a comprehensive look at indigent defense. There has been a working group, and that's true, but very few of us have had the opportunity to participate or have any subsequent substantive influence in that working group or what came out of it. And I think that the idea and the philosophy of going around the creation of crimes and treating them as violations is an appropriate way of dealing with the fiscal issues of the indigent defense fund. I also object to subsection 3 of section 24, specifically where we're talking about requiring a fiscal impact statement for any piece of legislation that has some kind of an increased indigent defense fund impact. And the reason that I object to that is because I have very, very little confidence in any state agency or legislative fiscal to give us an appropriate and accurate fiscal impact, weighing all of the factors that would come into play in giving us those kind of fiscal impacts. And I think that was borne out earlier on in this legislative session when there was an attempt to move one of my bills to Ways and Means, and the State Court Administrator's Office didn't have answers to several questions that were very pertinent to the fiscal impact on the Indigent Defense Fund. And I think that these sections are far-reaching policy-making decisions that this body's making in a very short, last-minute effort on the part of the legislature.
Madam
this
Chair,
session, without a comprehensive review, and I object to that process.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam.
Well,
thank you.
I have another amendment to offer.
Thank you.
Representative Mannix and I have got some additional amendments that will go somewhere towards taking care of Representative Mannix's concerns. So this is just kind of going to flow, and you can take it as it comes.
Representative Mannix.
On page 11, lines 18 through 28, and please note the counter number on the videotape so that when we have to go back and check this language, you can look it up, because my handwriting is terrible, as the council knows. Would read. I move to amend those lines to read as follows. Upon appearance of the defendant upon any misdemeanor charge, other than a misdemeanor created under ORS 813.010 and ORS 811.540, before the court asks under ORS 135.020 how the defendant pleads to the charge, the district attorney shall declare on the record the intention whether or not to treat the offense in the case as a violation. The case shall proceed as a violation unless the district attorney affirmatively states that the case shall proceed as a misdemeanor. If the case proceeds as a violation, the accusatory instrument shall be amended to denominate as a violation the offense in the case, and the offense, for purposes of the case, shall thereafter be treated as a violation, comma, subject to a fine as provided in ORS 161.635 for violations, period. If the district attorney declares an intention to treat the offense as a misdemeanor, the offense in such case shall thereafter continue to be treated as a crime, period, if the, that's the end of the changed language for lines 18 through 28. I left out a couple of commas, but we can get those in later. The statutory references were those proposed by the Judicial Department, which actually we had just adopted, that would leave out attempt to elude and DUIs. They had suggested that we leave those out automatically, but otherwise there's going to be a presumption that the case will proceed as a violation unless there's an affirmative statement to the contrary by the district attorney that the case will proceed as a misdemeanor.
Madam Chair.
Representative Clark.
Representative Mannix, I did not hear in that language the power of the court to override the presumption.
No, there's no power to override. Now, we're also going to, well, the rest of the motion will be to delete lines 2 through 6 on page 12.
I might speak, Representative
Mason.
I'm sorry, Representative Clark.
Representative Edmondson will chair.
I know the strong.
I'm out of time.
You got enough votes.
Well, we're running out of time again. As you, Representative Mannix, with all due respect, it's kind of like that old story Sam Irvin used to tell about somebody trying to clean a fish, and the fish said, "You know, you're gutting me. I'm trying to clean you." And this is gutting the bill. And that if you don't have that in there, it's kind of meaningless. And this is something that we've been trying to do. And let me also say, response to Representative Minnis, indigent defense is not something that would just, jump full-born from the forehead of the chair today. Indigent defense has been worked on and 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 worked on.
Where?
By the Judiciary Committee and the Interim Judiciary Committees and the Commission on the Judicial Branch and the ad infinitum. And some of these proposals are getting to be as old as proverbial hills, and they're not strange at all.
And some of us have opposed them for at least two sessions previous.
All right, so it's I don't think it's a question of not knowing this proposal. This is basically the Snopper proposal, what used to be called the Snopper proposal. It was heard last session, it was heard in session before. The topic of numerous interchanges between the defense bar and the district attorney's bar. And when you get right down to it, the only way you can save money in indigent defense, notwithstanding all of our goodwill, is to use less of it. That's just the truth.
If I could sort of, figuratively taking back the gavel, Representative Mason and committee members, I think we have plenty to think about and work on. We're not going to get through it today. And my proposal would be that the committee adjourn. Hear any objections?
Can we adjourn with a motion pending?
No.
I don't think we can.
I think we've been through this once before.
Word of House rules, can't you adjourn with a motion pending?
Procedurally incorrect.
You cannot, is that
adjourn
right?
Takes precedence over anything.
Is there a motion to adjourn?
I heard her ask if there any objection to adjourn.
I'm just objecting.
Well, you were too late. A little late.
You did? Oh, that's too bad. Okay.
Now, let me point something out, Representative Kelly. When a chair says, you know, are there any objection to adjourning, you know, hit it. You know.
Doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
Moving around.
That's all right. It's still pending.
We are well acquainted with that.
You know, I guess one comment is, I don't know what status we're in right now, but I know we're going to start getting lots of pressure.